Without followers, evil cannot spread.
You're an atheist. Tell me, how would you judge if he really was a Christian or just posing for one? Hey, I'm telling you, I'm a cow. Moo. Moo. I must be a cow, right? So am I a cow?
Nope. We have enough records to understand how apes have evolved into humans.
How do you know that? Who told you that?
Who told me that specifically? You think one...
Your teachers in school? What you're telling me is that there's a universal something that you don't know about that caused the Big Bang, and you don't know what it was, and nobody does, and yet you believe it. Man, you believe it on faith. Oh, by the way, moo. So am I a cow?
No, I don't think so, but...
Well, wait a minute. Why not? I'm mooing.
If anyone were to try to say within the classroom setting that the theory of evolution is somehow in question among the scientific community, that person would be subject to lose their job.
Exactly. So they're not free to be open and honest, are they? Oh, by the way, moo.
Logical. Flawlessly logical.
Everybody, welcome to the show, Faith and Reason Time. I'm your host, Matt Slick, and I hope you'll excuse me. Had a rough day today, and it started about 2 o'clock in the morning last night, sick daughter. Then 4 o'clock in the morning, another sick daughter, took her to ER, stuff like that, chest pains. We don't know what's going on. It was pretty serious. She's okay right now, and I didn't get enough sleep, had to work out, had to do a bunch of other stuff, and I am beat. So, why I'm saying that is because, well, one, you can pray for my kids. They need prayer. And also, you know, it just might be that if an atheist wants to call up and challenge me, that we might be even level about now since I'm so tired. That's right. Yeah, I know. It sounds arrogant, doesn't it? No, I just like to tweak the atheists because, hey, I like when atheists call. They're fun. All right. Hey, by the way, it's a Veterans Day, and I want to say thanks to all the veterans out there. I actually do make it a habit of, thanking the veterans. I see them around. I'll see guys in uniforms, and I'll just say, hey, you know, I want to say thanks for what you're doing for the country. And I say it on a regular basis. I do value what they do, and I do appreciate their sacrifice. They're the ones who put it on the line so that the rest of us can be free. I really appreciate that. So those of you who are veterans out there, seriously, thanks. Really do appreciate it. I really honestly do. I do know I never was a vet. I never was in the military. My dad was in the military. I'm a military brat. Moved 26 times before I was 12 years old. 12 different elementary schools. My dad was in the Air Force. Lived in Hawaii, North Dakota, Wyoming, Texas, Southern California. So, you know, I'm familiar enough, but wasn't in. I was almost drafted, though, for Vietnam. Oh, man. My number was number 2. I think that's what it was, number 2. Then the war ended, whatever. So, hey, for all you guys who've been there, all you guys have done the fighting, all of you served in the military, just want to say thanks for what you're doing, seriously. If I were president, I would really show that I appreciate it every day. You know, in fact, I noticed something. When I see whoever the president is that gets off the helicopter and they have a film of him walking and he salutes, please forgive my ignorance. I assume it's a Marine. I really don't know this stuff very well. And he salutes the Marine, salutes back. And, you know, he walks off. And, you know, I was saying, what would I do if I was a president? And I came off that helicopter and it's a guy standing there doing his job like that. I'd stop. And I would say, I want to thank you for what you're doing. And I'd salute him. And I would say it every time. You know, you guys are great. You guys make this country possible. And I need to be appreciated. So that's my view. And let's see. Hey, we're going to have open calls tonight. Oh, man, all the lines are lit. Oh, man. Maybe the atheists are taking me up on it. Who knows? We'll see what happens. If you want to call, folks, 877-207-2276. That's 877-207-2276. I am honestly pretty tired. I'm pretty wiped out. We'll just see how things go. And by the way, I'll be debating Eddie Tabash here at Boise State University on December 5th. I'll be putting some more information up probably tomorrow on the website, on the homepage, a little flyer kind of information thing. I got some details today. Put that up. And look at the callers. And what else? I think that's about it. You know what? Good enough. Let's get to the callers. I'll get to Chris from California. Chris, hey. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
Hey, you're an atheist, right?
You know this, yes, absolutely.
The only reason I know is because it says atheist on the Cameron wrote. But have we talked before?
We've talked before in the chat room and your website.
Okay. What's your nickname there?
Naturalist.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got to excuse me. This is not an excuse. I just don't remember names very well. That's just the way it is. So, okay.
I'm not a very memorable person, so it's completely all right.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But I do have a lot of trouble with names. Okay, what do you got, big guy?
I don't know. A few people from your website told me that I should call in because I'm an atheist, and I don't know, apparently kind of just expect to get torn apart right now, even though you're in your exhausted state. I don't know.
Well, hey, you know.
Ask you what you have.
Well, I mean, insult you or something? I could do that. I mean, that's kind of fun. Oh, you're liking that, huh? Yeah, you have a good sense of humor. Well, I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about God and how he does not exist, where it starts.
Okay. So he doesn't exist?
Well, of course, I don't believe he exists, but, I mean, you know, to each their own.
Okay. Well, how come you don't believe he exists?
To be honest with you, I haven't found any convincing evidence that he exists.
Okay.
And I just don't really, I don't see any God or God playing a role in nature. I just don't see it. Some people do. I do not.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question, okay? I'm going to really jump off a different angle, all right?
Okay, just,
and I've done this a couple of times with atheists. Not a big deal, and it's not some big slick sleight-of-hand trick or anything. I don't know what your opinion of me. I want to ask your opinion because I want to know if you're going to trust me. I mean, if I'm going to tell you something, I'm not going to trick you. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to exaggerate, things like that. I mean, would you believe me if I tell you what I'm going to tell you is the truth? Would you believe me?
You would believe that you were telling me the truth.
Okay.
But I don't know if I would completely accept it.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I wouldn't be lying to you. You'd believe I wouldn't be lying to you. How about that?
No, not purposely, willingly lying to me. No, I believe that you would be honest.
Okay, good. That's good. I appreciate it. That's a good, fair response to your part. Well, let me ask you this. I've asked this of atheists before, and I had a witness, and I actually saw a materialization one night. No drugs, no sleep deprivation, no weird foods, no experimentation, no accidents. I mean, just a normal late teen guy and getting involved with some occult stuff. I had a buddy of mine named Dave, and we were just fooling around with the occult stuff, and we both saw the same thing. We saw a blue ball of light materialize, which took the form of a man, and then it disappeared, and then in place of this person, thing, image, a yellow cross materialized and moved across the room. And even as I'm saying it, I can still see it in my head. You know, I can see it like I can see the face of my wife. You know, I mean, it's just that real to me. I could tell you how the height, the size, everything. And, you know, I saw this. And, you know, back in high school, I mean, I was all the top classes. I took all the classes so that I didn't have to take any science and math in college, which I didn't. I took no science and no math in any of my college classes because I did so well in high school. I mean, so yeah, I took all the advanced stuff. And a buddy of mine, my friend Dave, he saw the same thing. We conferred afterwards. He goes, yeah, I saw this blue ball of light that took this form of a man. We saw this yellow cross. He said, you saw the same thing I did. Now, okay, I'm not lying to you. Now, you don't have to believe that that happened, but what do you think of that? How would you explain that as an atheist?
As an atheist, I can't speak for all atheists, but it sounds like a pretty amazing story. I wish I was there. I wish I could see something like that as well. I've never witnessed anything like that. I believe you when you tell me that you saw that. I believe you when you say that your friends saw the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't think of a natural explanation for anything like that off the top of my head, but I don't necessarily feel that that points to a supernatural explanation.
Okay.
That's about all I could really comment on that.
That's okay. Well, how about this? Before I was born, my mom would see in a dream a man coming to her. He had a hat on. Most of the time he had a hat on. White long sleeve shirt, rolled up sleeves, black slacks, black shoes. And he'd come to her. He would terrify her. She would wake up. And she would watch as he would walk through the wall and stand at the foot of her bed. And she'd wake up my dad, because they're sleeping together, of course, and he'd get up, turn the light on, and he'd disappear. This happened periodically every few weeks for 2 years. And my mom, she passed away, but she's a genius. Her IQ was way up there. She could read 1,000 words a minute at 80% comprehension. She's an intelligent woman. I talked to her one day, and I said, look, Mom, I got to really ask you about this. I said, you're telling me this is what you saw? She said, yes. Were you on any medication? She said, no. Were you sleep deprived? No. Head injury? No. I had to go through all the things. I said, there's nothing like this. You didn't eat pizza every night before, whatever it was. She says, nope, there's no patterns. I says, okay. So she described this. Now, after I was born, I'm in the crib in the room, and this guy comes and sits and stands, wakes her up. And my dad couldn't see him, okay, but woke her up, and she woke up my father. My father said, what's he doing? And she said, well, he's over at the crib staring at me, okay, just watching me. And my dad turned the light on, disappeared, and he never showed up again. Now, the same guy, Dave, that I had this little seance thing with, he saw the same thing I did. We were doing this thing called astral projection. We're trying to leave our bodies. I could never do it. Dave said he could. I didn't believe him. I go, come on, give me a break. And I never told him about what my mom had seen. I never told him because I was just too embarrassed about it and thought it was too weird. Now I don't have any problems talking about it because of what I do and thought it through and everything. But back then, I didn't say anything to anybody. And so he said he could do astral projection, leave his body. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to put some stuff in my room tonight on my desk. You tell me what's there and what pattern it's in. He said, okay, I'll come over tonight. I said, great. So I do all the stuff on the desk. Next morning, on the way to school, high school, we're talking. I said, well, did you come on over? He said, no. Yeah, right. So what happened, he said, well, I was leaving my body and coming across the street, because we lived across the street from each other, and he said, there was this man that wouldn't let him enter the house. He had a black hat on, a white long-sleeve shirt rolled up to the elbows, black slacks, and black shoes. Now, he described the exact same thing my mom had described to me, and he didn't know about this. Now, what do you think of that?
Your mother never spoke to this this person?
Best I know, no, he didn't. No, she didn't, excuse me.
Well, again, I would say that's an amazing story. It sounds very strange, but I just I can't help but shake the feeling that there has to be a natural explanation.
Of course.
For any story.
How about this one? I'm taking this girl home from a Bible study, and she says, I should stop by. She needed a book. I happen to have that book. We're standing in my living room, my bookshelf, and this is before I married my wife. There's nothing going on. I just taking her home, I'll take her home. And she said she's going on a mission. In 2 weeks, she's going to be going to Australia. And all of a sudden, I remember this so clearly, I said to her, it's like this something came over me kind of a thing. It's weird as that might sound, as unclear as that is. Something came over me, and I looked at her and I said, you're not going on your mission. You're going to stay here. What's going to happen is you're going to meet a guy in 5 months. He's going to become your spiritual leader, and in 18 months, you and he are going to have a special bond and do a mission together. And then this feeling left, and I'm staring at her. My jaw dropped open, and her eyes bugged out, and she was upset. And so I got called to the pastor's office a couple days later. What did you do? I don't know what that was. I don't know. It was weird. And he said, well, she's really upset at you. I said, yeah, because she's supposed to go on this mission, right? 2 weeks later, she got on the plane and went to Australia for this mission. Now, I said she wasn't going to go. She went on. I get a phone call the next day. Hey, did you hear about her? And I says, what? She says, she came back. She got off the plane and said, she was in Australia, got off the plane. She wasn't supposed to be there. She got back on the plane and came home. 5 months later, she met this guy. He became her spiritual leader. He taught her. They got married at 18 months after that. And then They went on a mission together to England. She said, everything I told her came to pass. Now, what do you think of that?
All amazing stories. Taking your word on everything. I'm not saying that that you would lie or that you're being deceitful. I don't know. I find it odd that so many people have not had all these strange experiences where they predict the future or, some super, apparently supernatural event happens. I've never had one that kind of, I find it peculiar, you know, that it happens to some people, it doesn't happen to other people, and there's never really any solid evidence to show those who are unfortunate enough, like myself, to show us that these things actually happen.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, if there's a God, those things could be explained. If there's a spiritual realm out there, then those things could kind of be explained. If it were there, a spiritual realm, you'd say, well, okay, I can see why you could, you know, if it really was there, that could account for you seeing these things and these weird things going on.
Absolutely.
And if there was, maybe God, I'm not saying that I got this message from God. I'm not saying that. I don't know what to make of it. The Bible does talk about people being able to do that occasionally. I've had a few other, I could tell you other stories like this, okay? But I'll leave it at that. These things happened. And the best explanation for these kinds of things doesn't have to be naturalistic, but spiritual. And here's a question I got for you. Why wouldn't you be open to a non-naturalistic explanation?
Because the amount of non-naturalistic explanations that I think what you would be disagreement with right alongside me, some people are abducted by aliens. Other people, experience animalistic phenomenon. There's countless experiences that people have, and not all of them are attributed to Christianity or Judeo-Christian God. Yeah. Some of them are.
Something's happening. But with me, the reason I'm bringing up, I'm talking about my own experiences, it's not hearsay.
It's not hearsay.
Yeah, this is what I experienced. This is what I've seen. Okay, except for I didn't see this guy with the shirt and the hat and stuff. My mom did, and this other guy did, and both of them told me, and they didn't know, that's kind of weird. Okay, so, I guess you could say those are secondary, but the other two are primary. I've seen them. The reason I'm saying, I'm not lying to you, okay? I'm honestly being honest, okay? It's certainly possible that somehow I'm deceived some way, but I'm not stupid, not on drugs, et cetera. So, the best explanation usually is the simplest. There's a spiritual realm. I saw things.
Naturalistic one. What would I say to somebody who's experienced visions of Muhammad?
I'd say you probably did. But it doesn't really mean it was Muhammad. So you could have a vision of something.
Okay.
But verifying what it is. People do have visions in different places and times. Now here, I got a question for you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, please. No, it's okay.
Okay. Why do you assume naturalism to be true?
It's all that I have experienced. Okay. The only explanation, or the most simplest explanation that I can give you.
Okay. So, naturalism, for those who don't know, naturalism is that it's a philosophical position that all things in the universe can be explained naturalistically through the laws of physics, chemistry, motion, matter, things like that.
I would agree with that, yes.
That's what that is, simplified explanation, but that's what it is. So you're saying you haven't experienced anything other than that, and that's why you're going to presuppose the validity of naturalism.
I haven't experienced anything supernatural.
That you know of?
That I know of, yes.
Okay. But what you're doing is you're assuming, let me say it that way, you're assuming the validity of naturalism, because naturalism is a philosophy. Okay, it's a philosophical position where you assume a certain undergirding principle by which you interpret other things. Okay?
Yes.
The lens. I'm oversimplifying, but so it's a philosophical position. So here's a question. how do you validate that philosophical position as being true?
The lack of evidence of the supernatural. Aside from personal experiences, such as the ones that you've just stated, I see no solid evidence of supernaturalism.
Okay. Now let me ask you, do you believe that men walked on the moon?
Yes, I do.
Have you experienced it?
Have I experienced walking on the moon? No, I have not.
Okay. Have you talked to these guys who've walked on the moon?
No, but I've heard what they had to say.
So you've seen people who've just simply said it?
Yeah, simply said it. Countless accounts of people who witnessed it, people who went through the space program and aided in one way or another these people getting to the moon.
Well, in reality, what is less
videotape of people on the moon. Sorry,
well,
continue.
In reality, I don't know how many people walked the moon. 12? I'm going to pick that number. I'm probably way off, but let's just say 12 because whatever.
It wasn't too many.
It wasn't too many. I think it was 12. Maybe somebody in the chat room knows. Anyway, so let's just say 12 people walked on the moon.
Okay.
Okay. You can get a film in a studio, and you can get a bunch of guys at NASA who think it went and worked, but you don't have any way of verifying it. It's another assumption. You're assuming, within reason, though, the honesty and the integrity of these individuals, and you're actually trusting them that they're not lying to you, ultimately.
To a certain extent, I would agree. There are ways of analyzing film to find out if it's been tampered with in one way or another. I don't know of any supernatural film of supernatural events that has not been shown to be tampered with. I have not heard anything about the... I've never heard films of people moonwalking and all these kinds of moon landing, all these things. They've never been questioned as far as I understand it.
Well, what I'm trying to make a point here is that the problem with naturalism is it only goes so far. It's a philosophical position. You have to assume its validity. You have to beg the question of assuming rationality. And with a scientist, you have to hope that they are communicating to you accurately the information that they are supposed to. And the idea behind the scientific method is a philosophical one as well, in that you cannot validate the scientific method using the scientific method because it's begging the question. And within the scientific method, those who validate or report information to you must hopefully do it honestly. So there is an undergirding philosophical position. What we could get into an interesting discussion is why you would validate those positions from your atheistic perspective. Would your atheism allow you to rationally do that? Or are you stepping in by faith and assuming these things to be true and then judging reality in the world basically by faith?
Well, one interesting point about these scientific viewpoints is that they can be falsified.
Yes.
You have to show evidence of your claim, and this has to be testable evidence. So anybody, usually not me, mm-hmm. can carry out the same testing or observations that you have carried out in your experiment, uh-huh. and technically this should come to the same conclusion that you came to. Otherwise, we can show in one way or another what your experiment is
okay.
No, not right.
Okay, so is macroevolution falsifiable?
Macroevolution. I'm sorry. You'll have to explain the difference between macroevolution and microevolution. I'm not familiar with these.
Microevolution is just simply a reduction of the existing genetic information through predation and natural selection. Macroevolution is a development of entire new species, body type forms through mutation and natural selection over a long period of time. So one is the latter is an increase of genetic information. The former is a decrease of information. So, for example, you look at the fossil record and assume certain things that look alike belong together. And they'll say, here's the evolutionary system. Even though the evolutionary fossil record, well, let's say the fossil record is highly problematic and has a great deal of gaps in it, and there are basically my latest research has said there's no, in the scientific community, there's no undisputed transitional forms. They're all disputed by scientists who are saying you can't say there's, and they're not because they're Christians. Islam or atheists saying that this doesn't work. So the scientific community is just not in agreement about the theory of evolution. In fact, a growing number of scientists are abandoning it as more information comes out. So is it falsifiable? Because falsifiable means
evolution would be any kind of mutations as long as it resides within one particular species.
Yeah, basically. You know, you can get moth or frogs to change size and colors and things like that, but the information has to already exist in order for that to occur. Have you ever heard of the Cambrian explosion?
I have. I'm not by any...
Okay. 530 million years ago, basically, there's 90% of all the new body types suddenly form within 5 to 30 million years, which is a blink of the eye, evolutionarily speaking. It can't happen. They can't account for it. Falsifiability would mean that there would be evidence that would be there that would show the theory false. Evolutionary theory, if it was true, you would expect a gradation of fossils to appear all over the planet. You don't. You find, on the contrary, you find consistent huge gaps and where just one species, there it is, and then another one, there it is, and then another one, there it is. That's why Gould came up with the theory called punctuated equilibrium. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm assuming if you're a naturalist, you're going to believe in evolution, but yet evolution isn't falsifiable.
I believe evolution is falsifiable. I don't know if what you're saying. I mean,
how would it be falsifiable?
Gap in the fossil records.
Okay, let me ask you. How would it be falsifiable? By finding gaps in the records? Because that is what falsifies evolution. But what they do is they don't believe the information that's there. They don't believe it, and they presuppose the validity of naturalism and evolution, and so therefore they're not open to any other explanation.
Well, you mentioned the Cambrian explosion, which I have never found an actual evolutionary biologist or anyone who has looked at Cambrian explosion and said that it is out of the bounds of evolution. I've never heard that.
Oh, no, I didn't say that, no.
Studies these things.
Oh, no. The Cambrian explosion is really problematic in the evolutionary theory because the genetic information is so incredibly complex. And I want to get into talking about that with you. The DNA information, it's just phenomenally complex. And it's just not possible for body types. They're called phyla. For example, a body type is a bird versus a quadruped like a horse or a cat or a dog, or a biped like you and I, or a fish is another body type, a mollusk, an octopus. These are major, radically different body types. The scientists have done the calculations on how much information would be necessary to be changed at a certain rate, all this stuff, for these different ones to occur. It's impossible. It just doesn't work. The Cambrian explosion is a huge problem. The best that the atheists can do is say there was some cosmic source of radiation which caused a lot of mutations. They have no evidence for it. But they are just assuming the validity of naturalism and then assuming that they have to interpret the data consistent with naturalism. I want to know why they would assume that to be true in the first place. Because if they're supposed to be falsifiable, how do you falsify naturalism?
I can't really come up with explanations. I mean, if you want to get into like the details of evolution and Cambrian explosion and all these other things, you probably be best to talk to somebody who's actually studied in those fields.
Yeah.
I have not. As you said, I assume them to be true. There is large amounts of evidence to show that they're true, but I'm probably not the best one to explain all of those.
Okay, well, let me run something by you then, okay?
Yeah.
Let me run something by you. I've run this by other atheists, okay? Let's say you and I are just having a nice discussion about this topic. We're just talking about it. We're walking through. We're taking a shortcut. We're going to go get something to eat, and we're taking a shortcut through a kind of a foresty kind of path for a mile, okay? Along a path, and we're just not agreeing, and we're having a nice, lively, friendly conversation, and we come across in the path three stones in a, really right together. And about a foot later, there's 5, and a foot later, there's 7, and a foot later, there's 11, 13, 17, 19, 23. It goes on up to 101. They're prime numbers. Now, you and I, we're looking at them, and I look at you, and you look at me, and we look back at those. Now, would you assume that they happened by random chance, or would you assume that an intelligence was involved in arranging them? Which is most logical?
Arranging rocks and primary numbers along a path.
Yep, and equal distant sequences of prime numbers. Would it by random chance, or did somebody come along and stack them up?
It sounds like that probably would not occur through random chance.
Okay, I would agree with you. Okay, I would agree. That's not something that would. You know, if I said to you, "Hey, man, hey, Chris, man, this is like phenomenal. The randomness of this forest produced this." You might look at me and want to take a couple steps away from me. You know, like, okay, he's missing a couple of ounces in his gallon there. So we could look at that, and we would, you know, the most logical explanation obviously is an intelligence was involved because we have patterns, we have information. Now, 10 years later, for some weird reason, you and I are now walking on the moon. We're astronauts. We've been arguing about this. Hey, they really were on the moon. Okay? And so, hey, Chris, you win that one. You proved it, you know. Huh? And you were laughing about it, okay? And I pat you on the back and pull your air hose out. Uh-huh, kidding. You know, put it back in. And we're walking around a big boulder. And, hey, 3 rocks. About a foot later, there's 5, there's 7. And goes on up to 101 again. There's no footprints around there. There's no tracks. There's no anything. Just a bunch of rocks about a foot apart, prime number sequences, just like we saw 10 years earlier on the Earth. Now, would you assume an intelligence arranged them, or would you assume it had by random chance?
A group of rocks in the same pattern that we saw on Earth, I don't know. I would probably say that that's very unlikely to happen by random chance.
Okay. It most logically, it's by design. I mean, that's the most logical explanation. This is logical. Because we're looking for information. What information is a pattern that exists within its own realm, like rocks, patterns, you know, rocks and leaves. If it's a pile of leaves, we'd have recognized it, okay? But complexity exists. You can take 100 rocks, for example, throw them out onto a sidewalk. You have complexity. But you have no specificity. They have complexity. You gather them up, you throw them out again. You have another set of you know, random kind of throwings. There's always going to be complexity, but no specificity. Now, if I were to take those hundred rocks and spell out, my cat is good, now we have the same complexity, but now with it something additional called specificity. There's specified complexity in it. Now we see there's information. Information requires a sender and a receiver for it to be information. Now, let's look at the DNA molecule for a second. The DNA molecule consists of 4 amino acids. Deoxyribonucleic consists of 4 amino acids, adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. AT go together and GC go together. So there's AT and GC. You only have 2. They only bond A and T bond and G and C bond. They don't go the other way or any other ways. But you can have AT and TA and GC and CG, okay? Just flip them. So you have 4 to work with. The DNA molecule, the helix background, excuse me, the helix backbone, where that the thing it twists, is a sugar phosphate construction. And it twists just simply because of molecular structure, that's all it is. The little rungs are the nucleotide bond pairs. There's an AT, and another rung will be a GC. Another rung might be a CG. Another one might be an AT again, or a TA. That's all it is. Down the whole axis of this DNA molecule. Now, guess about how many rungs there are before you have information. On a minimal level, it's about 1 million on this kind of a how it works. Now, the complexity of that arrangement of information is humongous. It is so huge. You do what's called a permutation. You know what permutation is?
No, I do not.
Permutation. Okay, I'm going to teach you two things, and then you'll see what I'm getting at. I'm going to put it all together. Permutation and the universal probability bound. It's a hypothetical limit, the universal probability bound. But here's a permutation. Let's say you have two blocks. You're going to arrange them left and right. How many ways can you do it? You have two, so it's two times one. That's two. If you have three blocks, it's three times two times one. If you have four blocks, it's four times three times two times one. That's how many different ways you can do it. 4 times 3 times 2 times 1, okay? So 4 times 3 is 12, times 2 is 24, times 1 is 24. So you have 4 blocks, you can arrange them in 24 different ways. You have 5 blocks, just multiply 24 times 5. Then multiply the next one by 6, but then that by 7, then that one by 8, then the next one by 9. And you can see, pretty soon, you have an astronomical number, right?
I could see how you get there pretty quickly, yes.
Absolutely. Now, put that aside for a second. The maximum number of seconds in the universe, if the universe was 10 to the 18 billion years old, but it isn't, that's what they don't, you know, they say 15 billion, but I'll just go with 18. That would be 10 to the 18th, coincidentally, seconds. The maximum number of particles in the universe is 10 to the 80th power. The fastest any particle can change its rate per second is 10 to the 40th times. Okay? Do you know about those numbers?
I really have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
That's okay. Lipstick in amazement.
That's okay. So, 2 times 2 is 2 to the second power. That's 2 times 2. 2 times 2 times 2 is 2 to the third power. 2 times 2 times 2 times 2 is 2 to the fourth power. And, for example, if you were to take a piece of paper that's 1/500th of an inch thick, just 1/500th of an inch thick, you tear it in half, then put it on top of itself, you get 2. Tear those in half, you've got 4. Tear those in half, you've got 8. Tear those in half, you've got 16, then 32, 64. Just do it 50 times. The stack is over 35 million miles high. I could prove it on math, on paper, it's easy to do. So we have a number with an exponent, 2 to the 50th, for example, or 2 to the whatever. It's a huge number. The maximum number of possible mathematical occurrences in the entire universe, if the entire universe was 18 billion years old, consisting of 10 to the 80th particles, or a 1 with 80 zeros behind it, that's how many particles are in the entire universe, and each particle could change its state 10 to the 40th times per second, or 1 with 40 zeros times every second. So you take how many times each particle can change per second, times the number of particles, times the number of seconds. You get 10 to the 138th. That's a 1 with 138 zeros behind it. That's the maximum number of potential occurrences that could ever have occurred in the entire universe. Now, the DNA molecule with a million parts is a million times 999,999. 999998, all the way down. It exceeds that universal number basically to what's called infinity. There's a certain mathematical limit. When you get to that limit, it's just, you just say, forget it. It doesn't even, don't even bother going any higher. It's just inconceivably large, and it's for all intents and purposes, it's at infinity. Information in the DNA molecule suggests a designer, suggests an intelligence. It cannot have happened by random chance. There is your evidence that you can verify and look, and you can then say that your naturalism is not substantiated. It can be falsified now. That you can actually look into physical structures and see information formation that is so complex that it could not have formed by randomness. And since we know that information formation occurs with intelligence, if we see the stones in the prime number stacks, we assume there's an intelligence. That's what we naturally assume, because that's what it is. That's what information is. Information exists in the DNA molecule. Why is it that there's no intelligence behind it? That's what naturalism cannot answer. It cannot. It cannot answer it. It actually, the limits of naturalism actually just grind this into the dirt. It cannot give a rational, logical, scientific reason for the formation of DNA.
Well, you listed off many very complex figures and numbers, and things that I really have no idea
if they're true.
What any of that was. It seemed like you were trying to confuse me with complexity.
Oh, no, I wasn't trying to confuse you at all, seriously.
Because did you really expect me to kind of follow along with all of those fancy figures?
No, I didn't know how much you knew. That's all. And so I explained
I'll tell you right now, I don't know much. I'm a very simple-minded fellow.
That's all right.
So I can't follow along with the big numbers and, you know, primary numbers and all those.
Okay. That's fair. That's okay.
Helix, you know, and all those fancy things. I'm not one of those types. Not the intellectual.
That's all right. There are books that go over this, that discuss this. If you're interested, I can give you some titles.
I would actually love to to read about some books that you would have about on the subject. Maybe I wouldn't be such a layman.
Okay, I tell you what. There's a guy named William Dembski, D-E-M-S-K-I. Go to Amazon.com and look up William Dembski and look up Intelligent Design. Intelligent Design, okay?
Okay.
And just get a couple of the books. Read through a couple of the bios, the basics, and see which one appeals to you. And then go through and start reading. And what he'll do is he will start explaining what I've explained, and, you know, through pages. This is where I learned it.
Okay.
And, you know, you could check it out.
I definitely will, yes.
Because, let me tell you, I guess, here's a proverb. Eternity is a long time to be wrong. You know, I wouldn't want to take a chance about eternity and say, I don't know, I'm going to just deny God. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. I don't care. I mean, that wouldn't be smart, at least for me. And I do believe God. And I've got some other experiences which are very powerful, which have demonstrated to me God is real. But I can't convince you using those. And so, you know, we have two callers hanging out. I would really like to talk to you longer. Maybe we'd call back tomorrow night. But something I'd like to ask you about, seriously, is the biblical account of the resurrection of Jesus. I'd love to talk to you about that and see what you think about that.
You would love to talk to me about this tonight, or would you like me to call back?
Could you call back maybe tomorrow? Would that be okay?
Tomorrow at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should be able to do that.
Okay. And, you know, check things out. You know, check what I say. My last name is Slick, so you got to be really wary of me, okay?
I definitely will look into what you said. I don't know. It was very interesting. A lot of the things went right over my head.
Well, sorry about that.
No, no, it's okay. You're obviously a very learned fellow. You know what you're talking about. Like I said, I'll go do my research. I'll look into this offer that you suggested to me, and I will get back to you.
Okay. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate, you know, you're a nice nice guy and just, you know, looking and learning. I just remembered Signs of Intelligence. It's an Understanding of Intelligent Design by Dembski. That's a good book to get. Okay?
Signs of Intelligence. I definitely will. I've got his name written down right here.
Okay. Check it out, man.
So much.
Okay. And I hope to talk to you tomorrow night. We can talk about other stuff.
Yes, I look forward to it.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay, man. All right. Hey, that was a good conversation. I like talking to atheists. He's a nice atheist. You know, he kind of ruined something for me, though. I got to tell you this. I got a confession, and we'll get to Chris from New Jersey in a second. He kind of ruined something for me. I'm used to atheists being obstreperous twits. He wasn't. He was actually a nice guy. So he's ruining my assessment of atheists. This guy, you know, he's pretty good. I hate to admit it, but it's true. Darn it. Okay. Hey, 877-207-2276. Let's get to Chris from New Jersey. Hey, Chris, how you doing, man?
Hey, how are you, Matt?
I'm doing fine, buddy. What's up?
Good. Me and my brother were talking about what the what it means in Psalms 90, where it says that a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day to God.
It's a figure of speech. The word thousand, the number thousand, is often used in Jewish context as a great number representing a large period of time or numbers. God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Days but 1,000 years, 1,000 years but a day. Revelation 20 in the context of figurative stuff, Satan's bound for 1,000 years, etc. You'll find that the term 1,000, what my research has shown, and maybe I'm wrong, I mean, I'd be careful about this because I don't remember every single detail of every research I've done, but best I understand that 1,000 years, the 1,000 figure is a representative number, not always to be taken as a literal number, but a representative number. And by the way, folks, I didn't remember the book about Dembski. I saw it. I looked in I say this because honesty to me is really important. I looked on Amazon and saw it. And then I did remember once I saw it, Sign of Intelligence, but that's where I got the information. So anyway, back to that. So that's how come, that's how that is with that.
Okay.
Okay.
Because the theory that we were talking about, I don't know if, I'm sure many people have thought about this, but many theologians think that the Earth is around 6,000 years old.
Mm-hmm. It may be, yeah.
So we were talking, we're like, you know what, if this is true, like if God says that 1,000 years is like a day,
mm-hmm.
and this is the 6,000th year for us, it could be the sixth day for him.
Yeah.
And we were just going back and forth, and then on the seventh day he rested, which it says in Genesis. And then that would bring up Satan being locked away for 1,000 years.
Well,
so we were just going over, and we were like, that could be like a metaphor for he rested from maybe fighting against, I don't know, the demon for 1,000 years.
Okay, let's not go too far. Let's go. Hold on. You're saying several things. Let's talk about this rest thing that God did on the seventh day. Now, there's arguments for the day being 24 hours. There's arguments for the day being a little bit longer. There's arguments scientifically that the 6 days could have been literal from the perspective of the earth, but because of relativity and how things were in the universe and formation and speed, as the universe was expanding, that it could have been longer periods outside, and both of them work. It really gets complex. Why do you think God rested on the seventh day? Was he tired?
He was finished with everything.
Ah.
No, he was not tired. He was finished.
He's finished. Very good. Now, I'm going to just kind of throw this out. Okay. What does the word rest mean to you, kind of? Let's just, you know, if you don't know, that's okay. But you can tell by the way I'm asking it, you know. Something's
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I can kind of tell.
I'm going for something, aren't I?
Why don't you just tell me?
Okay. He's a smart guy. Hey, just tell me. Jesus said, come to me and I will give you rest. Now, Jesus is the Sabbath. He is our rest. Now, of all the Ten Commandments that are listed in Exodus 20, only 9 of them are reinstituted, reiterated in the New Testament. One of them is not. Mm-hmm. Guess which one is not?
The Sabbath.
The Sabbath. Because the Sabbath ultimately points to the rest that we have in Christ. Because we stop from our work to rest. We're resting because God commands us to rest. Well, the only way we can rest is by faith in Christ, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
God commands us to believe. He wants us to believe. Believe in him. He wants everyone to repent, Acts 17:30. Was to believe in him, Exodus 20. Well, rest, this is how I see it. Okay, this is my studies, and so I've seen it. I really believe that by putting Christ in the scriptures, that things clear up. Because he says in John 5:39, he says, you search the scriptures because in them you think you have eternal life, but it is these that bear witness of me. So the Bible's about him. So I look even at the creation work, because I believe it was Jesus who was doing that creative work, the pre-incarnate Christ. You go to Colossians 1:16-17, John chapter 1, verses 1-3.
Mm-hmm.
And that he was one typifying what really the rest means. So I lean towards the rest there. Yes, of course, it's finished. God, you know, he wasn't tired. He stopped. But it's specific. At the seventh day, that's when you take a break from everything else you're doing. You don't do any work. Well, where's this seventh day? But the word God stopped from his work. So he, and we're made in his image, we stop from our work. But ultimately, the way we stop from any works is by resting in Christ. Because ultimately, the real reality is being with God forever. That's the ultimate, because God is the standard. If you put God in the center and Christ in the center of all of this, okay, it starts making some sense. Now, the millennium reign. You know, as you're talking about 1,000 years, you know, being maybe the 6,000 years, the 6 days is 6,000 years. This is an old concept that you stumbled on. And that the Sabbath rest is the 1,000-year period, right?
And then the year 8,000, since Jesus is like the number 8.
Ooh, Jesu Christos.
So when he reigns.
Right. Except he said, now here's, let me throw a monkey wrench in there, get you thinking, okay? We know that during the millennial reign, that Satan's supposed to be bound, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, have you read where Jesus said he was bound?
No.
Okay. You go to Matthew chapter 12, verses 22 through 32. It's blasphemy of the Holy Spirit is the main context there. But Jesus is casting out demons, and the Pharisees say, hey, you're doing it by the power of the devil, by Beelzebul, the ruler of the demons. And Jesus says, and if Satan casts out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then is can his kingdom stand? And if I, by Beelzebul, cast out demons, by whom do your sons cast them out? But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God has come upon you. Or how can anyone, verse 29, how can anyone enter the strong man's house and carry off his property unless he first binds the strong man? Now, who's the strong man?
The devil.
The devil. Now, he says you have to first bind the strong man in order to, so to speak, carry off his property. Because remember, they're talking about him casting out demons.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's casting out demons. So what's logical here? Satan's been bound.
But wasn't that 2,000 years ago?
Yeah.
But the 1,000 isn't literal?
There you go.
Okay.
He said he was, I mean, he said it right there. He said it, that he was cast out, right? Let me throw something else at you for fun. I'm going to mess you up, okay? You ready?
I'm always ready.
Okay, that's good. What I'm trying to do is get you to go, whoa, hey, wait a minute, like, whoa, I never knew that. And that you'd think differently. Now, do you believe in the rapture?
Yes.
Good. I do too. Do you believe that, I don't know, it's okay, pre-trib or post-trib or mid-trib rapture? What do you believe?
I was looking at a couple verses and I came to the conclusion that he would be coming at the end of the tribulation.
Ooh, very good. Oh, very good. I agree with you there. Okay, now let me ask you. When it says in the Bible, Matthew 24, Luke 17, Mark 13, that two men are in the field, one is taken, one is left. Is that the rapture?
Possibly.
Okay, that's a good answer. Because you're probably suspicious, because you know I'm setting you up, right?
Well, I just really haven't studied it yet.
Okay. A lot of people believe it's the rapture, but it is not. Because the ones who are taken are the wicked. For as it was in the days before the flood, they were eating, they were drinking, they were giving in marriage till the flood came and Noah entered the ark. They did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. Well, that's Matthew 24. If you go to Luke 17, it says the exact same thing, except it says, and the flood came and destroyed them all. Well, the ones who were eating and drinking, giving in marriage were taken away were the ones who were destroyed. They asked Jesus in the end of Luke 17, where was he taken? And he gives them an answer. Where the body is, the vultures gather. That's his answer. Now, who's taken? The wicked.
The wicked.
Now, I'm going to throw something else at you. In the Bible, Jesus has an end times view, so does Paul. And you can see it by differentiating, by looking at this age and the age to come. At the end of this age, certain things happen, and at the age to come, other things happen. I should do it. I did this about 2 years ago. I went through the Bible study on this on the air. I think I might do it again next week and tell everybody I'll do it. Sit next to the radio, get a piece of paper out and a pencil, and I'll just read it through the scriptures, and we'll do it. You can write the scriptures down, reference it yourself, and go check it out more fully later. But maybe I'll do this again just for fun. If people want me to, they can email me, let me know, or say it in the chat room in a little bit. Now, in Matthew 13, Jesus is talking about the sower who goes out to the kingdom and throws out seed. The enemy puts out tares, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the workers say, hey, can we tear up the tares? He says, no, because you might tear up the wheat also. Allow them both to grow together until the time of the harvest, which is the end of the age. This is Matthew 13. Read the whole thing. He interprets it. Allow them both to grow together until the end of the age, is what he says. But until the time of the harvest, but later he interprets it, says the harvest is at the end of the age. And I'll say to the reapers, first gather up the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them up. Now, the first ones gathered at the harvest are the wicked, not the Christians. This is according to Jesus' own words right here. Most churches aren't teaching this because, well, they have an agenda. This is not what the Bible, okay? This is, what we're trying to do is show you some verses, show you some stuff to get you thinking. Now, here's something to think about. I'll do this, okay? Now, the millennium is supposed to be 1,000 years, right? Where Satan's bound when the 1,000 years begins, right? But Jesus said Satan was already bound back in Matthew 12, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's what he said, okay? Now, is it not true that after the 1,000 years, there's supposed to be a new heavens and new earth made, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the rapture, it happens way before all that. It happens at the beginning of the millennium, 7 years, mid-trib, whatever it is, but right before the millennium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, let me read something to you. This is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 16, through chapter 5, verse 2. No chapter break in the Greek there. It's just this what it says. Then I'm going to go to 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. 1 Thessalonians 4, 16. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. This is the rapture, okay? It says, and thus we will always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words. Now, as to the times and the epochs, brethren, you have no need of anything to be written to you. For you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night. So what is it that the day of the Lord that comes like a thief in the night? It's the rapture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's talking about. That's the context. Now, check this out. This is 2 Peter chapter 3. Now remember, the rapture is at the beginning of the millennium, right? Right?
Yeah.
The new heavens and new earth are at the end of the millennium, right?
Mm-hmm.
1,000 years, right? Well, look what 2 Peter 3:10 says. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. Now, in 1 Thessalonians, it says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. But in 2 Peter 3:10, it says, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief. It doesn't say in the night. It says, the day of the Lord will come like a thief. Okay? Well, that's close enough for me. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. You know, in this 1 Thessalonians, it's like, you know, it comes in the night. You don't know when. It's, you know, it's just unexpected. That's what he's saying here. The day of the Lord will come like a thief. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, right? Same thing. But both of them equate the same day to events that are supposed to be 1,000 years apart, according to premillennial view. One is that the rapture is supposed to be happening at the beginning of the millennium and the new heavens and new earth at the end of the millennium, but both of them are said to be on the day of the Lord that comes like a thief, which is the same day. Where's the 1,000-year reign?
I don't know.
That's the question. See, there's more to this. And I can show you even more stuff with the trumpets, with other things like that. Maybe I'll do this because it kind of made me think. Maybe I'll do this next week.
Could the thousand years be a day have anything to do with that? 1,000 years is a day to God?
It's a figurative usage. It's a figurative usage of the term thousand, isn't it?
Hmm.
And look at Revelation 20. About the angel came out of heaven with a key and a chain to get the dragon. This is all figurative. And bound him for 1,000 years, but that's literal, right? Or is it? Just trying to make you think, that's all. And we got about 15 seconds. I got to get going.
All right. Thank you very much.
Hey, man. I hope it challenged you. Doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just trying to challenge you, get you thinking. Okay?
Yeah, that's awesome. All right.
Good.
God bless.
Hey, folks, you know, what I just presented was basically the amillennial view. You don't have to agree with it. I just love showing people stuff that makes them go, wait a minute. And then they start looking in the Word of God. If that's what happens, praise God. just come up with your own understanding as you read. That's what you're supposed to do. Romans chapter 14 says so. God bless everybody. By His grace, we'll see you tomorrow night. Later.
This has been Faith and Reason with Matt Slick. For more, go to carm.org. That's carm.org.
Your local Christian radio ministry serving Southwest Idaho on AM 790. Solid Talk, KSPD, Boise.